You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Yeah, hi everybody, and welcome to my couch. As you always are here Wednesdays right now at 11 in the morning Pacific Standard Time and wherever else you're listening from. Today I have a great guest, as always. But let me ask you a few questions just to sort of roll into what we're talking about today. What would your life be like if you were able to just go with the flow of things? Yeah, that's what we're talking about today. Does it irritate you when people say, just go with the flow, right? Sometimes it bugs me. I have some relatives that are very chill, and I'll talk to them about issues or something that comes up, and they'll say, oh, just go with the flow. And I'm like, right. I mean, just, you know, when we thought we were going to have a good day or our anxiety amps up because of another personal or professional ordeal we're having to, you know, cope with, we're going to learn how to deal with anxiety when something unexpected and negative happens that changes everything today. So how do you deal with difficult people and situations? I want you to sort of think about the way you react. So today I have a best-selling author, successful business leader, public speaker, professor, Daniel Miller, and he's going to offer tools and strategies coupled with inspiring true stories to help guide you through these tough days and times. We're all sort of experiencing it here in this country and the world, of course. He's going to try to teach you and help you with ways to go with the flow and why he chose that idea. And also how to manage your anxiety about dealing with difficult times and people and things like that. So let's bring him on live here on the show. There he is. Daniel, thank you so much for being on the couch today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dr. Michelle. It's really nice to be here.
Well, listen, the book you wrote, yes, spot on.
Thank you.
So many of your tools that you use are, you know, not only classics, but nouveau ways of working with anxiety and dealing with, you know, those constant ruminations about, oh my God, how am I going to deal with this? And
yes,
waking up in the morning and just, you know, you're just flooded with gotta do's or whatever. So
yes,
thank you so much for writing that.
Yeah.
Good stuff. So the way of the wave, nature's model for navigating life's currents. You know, I'm going to go ahead and give your bio, and then I'm going to ask you all about your book and your teachings and things like that. So,
okay.
By the way, you graduated from UCLA with honors in business administration, finished in the top 5% of your class at the UCLA School of Law. Not easy to get into or accomplish. And I know you were a young adult, and you became a real estate instructor in the UCLA Extension Program, and then published a best-selling professional book. This is, I think you were in your 30s.
It's yeah, mid-30s.
Right? How to Invest in Real Estate Syndicates. And you've also written best-selling inspirational books, and you're an artist and a poet. If you go on to his website, you're going to – your art is amazing, by the way.
Thank you.
Is just – you've got the left and the right brain both going there, Daniel. So anyway, the books he's written before, his latest, we're talking about The Gifts of Acceptance, Losing Control and Finding Serenity, Acceptance in the Time of COVID-19, and of course, the best-selling book we just talked about, How to Invest in Real Estate Syndicates. What a great book that is, and what a wonderful informational book. So anyway, we're going to get into you and how you just sort of decided to jump into the waves with this book. So I know that you've gone through a lot of things in your life, and I always like to ask my guests to share a little bit about their backstory and why they decided to write their book. So
sure.
I'd love to hear about it, Daniel.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that question. It goes back 40 years. 40 years ago, I was a major controller about everything, family, especially business. I knew what was best for everybody, except really myself.
Right.
And then over a 5-year period, there were a series of events that really brought me to my knees. Someone tried to set a fire under my son's room. Barely put that out.
Oh my God.
I had one of my buildings that burned. Just a slew of things, near bankruptcy. I don't want to get like too much into it. And ultimately, I lost half of my nose because of self-neglect and not seeing a dermatologist when I should have. So, so this period of 5 years, it was like, when is it going to stop? When is it going to stop?
Right.
And I kept still trying to control and trying to handle things too much. And until with the string of 5 surgeries, I had to surrender. I was physically, emotionally, spiritually totally depleted.
Wow.
And I went to the beach one day and I sat on the rocks looking at the waves and just noticing how not only how awesome they are, but how mysterious they are, how they're so random in such a variety of ways.
Yes.
And unpredictable. And as I was observing that, it just occurred to me instinctively that this is the way I wanted to leave my life, so to speak, and use the waves as a metaphor. They encompass so much of what we engage and deal with in our own lives, particularly the obstacles and the challenges we have. So that was the beginning of my healing.
Yeah.
And I actually wrote on it for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And during COVID, when I was moving files to storage, as going through old files, I came across 15 chapters of a book that I had written in 1988 called The Wave.
Wow.
And I'd taken it as far as I could, because I didn't then know enough about the concept. I knew what it was to me, but to explain it to others was a challenge, number one. Number two, I didn't experience enough in life at that time. But that was the beginning of the wave. And so when in COVID, I saw it, and I said, well, maybe now I know enough about the wave, because I've been trying to live it
for
40 years, that I can share it with others.
Right.
And, you know, I love writing. What can I say?
Oh,
I love
writing. You're a good writer.
And so I started writing.
Yeah.
And 5 years later, I ended up with this that just came out. And it's a book that, quite honestly, I'm very proud of. It's very personal, that it tells more of my stories.
Sure.
And I don't look at it as a self-help book. I look at it as a little bit memoir, a little bit as a guidance that, here's what worked for me. Maybe it can work for you if you'd like to read it and see. So that's how this book came about 40 years later.
Wow, that's incredible. That's a great story. Isn't that interesting how we pick things up and say, wait a minute, this is still really relevant.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So again, folks, the book is The Way of the Wave, Nature's Model for Navigating Life's Currents. And you're humble. I know you said, no, I mean, you're so educated and a great writer and very artistic as well. No, it's true. But I think that your tools that you talk about in your book are therapeutic. And I see you as a wise man who's been through a lot and created a lot of, you know, self-help tools and also learned a lot. You know, there are techniques that I have used in therapy before and new ones also that you suggest, which are really cool. So I love your way of, and maybe you can explain this again, a little more in depth, of going with the wave. Go with the wave, you say. What is going with the wave? What is that all about?
Thank you for that question. To me, it's a little bit more than saying going with the flow. You know, it's like I want to know how to go with the flow, but how do you do it? I mean, like you said earlier, people mention it, but how do you do it? And For me, the wave is a little bit more than that because it's so nature-based.
Yeah.
You know, and to me, nature is just a very important part of my life. Is, you know, like I go out every morning, as I did this morning. I have a wonderful olive tree in the backyard.
Nice.
And I pray for guidance. Yes. and willingness. Ooh. And I immerse myself in that peace in the morning, particularly. There's a certain mystery to nature. There's an unknowingness to it.
Yes.
But somehow I feel connected to it.
Absolutely.
And so there's this, I wanted to use the word a natural rhythm or force. And to me, that's what the wave embodies. Okay. And the key then becomes, how do we align ourselves with that natural energy force?
Yes.
And what keeps us away from doing that, which I call the wave obstructors? Mm-hmm. And what enhances that? What encourages that? And which I call the wave enhancers. So ultimately, it's a matter of knowing what these obstacles are. And I write about them in the book, and I'd be happy to share some here.
Sure.
And being aware of them, and then knowing what steps can I take to alleviate those or diminish those. And the same with the what I call the enhancers. How can I tap into these enhancers? The main ones to me is acceptance and trust.
Mm, very, so very.
It's sort of like
difficult.
I can't do it all the time. I can't do it as fully. It's always a challenge. But with the awareness and having some tools, I'm riding the wave more often and for longer periods of time than certainly 40 years ago. And it's been a transition over 40 years. And that's something I learn every day, quite honestly.
Oh, absolutely. Isn't that the way to do it? What a great idea. I mean, learning every day. And so I want to get in a little bit more into the wave obstructors, some of the things that you've had to deal with, which we briefly touched on, but other things that come into our lives
that
other people can really, you know, identify with. So what are some of those that you talk about?
Well, probably the most formidable one, and I've written about this in my other book, is control. Emotion to control. And the reason that control, I call it, restricts the currents. You know, we look at waves. I used to body surf. For those who have body surfed, as you know, that the waves control us. We're not controlling them.
Right.
And the best thing we can do is try to align with them.
Right.
With the waves. It's the same here. So losing control or letting go of control in a way releases the currents, right?
Right.
And then it's acceptance and the enhancers that can help us align with the currents. But some of the obstructors, the big ones, at least for me and people I've talked to, I think others, is my propensity to be too judgmental of others.
Oh, boy.
My propensity to expect too much of others.
Right.
My limited thinking. My not being humble, anger, resentment, those things all like obstruct the flow. They focus on other people and other things and away from ourselves.
Sure. Yeah, that's true. Well, it's not easy, you know, sometimes.
No, I can share a story. I don't know.
Sure.
This has to do with judgment. You know, when I went to law school many, many moons ago, one day we were waiting for the torch teacher to arrive in class. So we sat at desks that were tiered up toward the back of the room. And before the instructor came, there was a gentleman in the back of the room that started on the desk and walked down toward the front of the desk, walking on people's desks until he reached the front of the room. And everybody was laughing. You know
what?
Really upset. I said, "What is he doing?" You know.
Yeah.
And I really judged him very hard. Yeah. So much that I didn't want to really have anything to do with him in law school. Well, fast forward to 5 years, this man became the best man at my wedding. So the man that I harshly became my best friend.
Right.
He became an amazing public servant. He was the public defender of Los Angeles County for about 15 years, overseeing 700 attorneys. And his last name was Judge, of all things, Michael Judge.
How perfect is that?
So it's an example of my judging. And so I examine, well, why was I that way? And I still do when I judge, why am I this way? And one of the reasons back then, I was a very shy, reserved person. And to see someone so outward going,
right,
got to me, you know.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Now when I judge things, and they could be simple, like, why do they paint their house that color? Why are they wearing this? It's amazing if you take a moment and you think of how much we're truly judging people and things. And why? I mean, what is the reason or motive? You know, and that's what I write about in the book, is my story. How do I get in touch with that? What is my motive? And, you know, the truth is, I've never found that I have a motive, in the sense that, does it make me feel better? Does it make me feel better than?
Right. Perhaps.
Maybe momentarily for a few seconds, but, you know, not truly, really. And so what it really does, I believe, is judging is a diversionary tactic that takes the focus off ourselves by putting it on others.
Absolutely.
So.
No, you nailed it. I mean, I think that's exactly right, Daniel. And, you know, it's many times in conjunction with what you're saying, I tell some of my patients when we're talking about, you know, they're feeling guilty or they're talking badly about other people who are interfering with their life or difficult. Right. And or something as simple as, why are they wearing that? Or like you said, why are they painting their house that? I say, you know, everybody has their own truth, their own way, their own whatever. And if you can, almost in the same sense as you, segue that like a wave into the thought of, yeah, but I guess they're dressing like that because they need the expression and it makes them feel good.
Exactly.
I mean, we have people in my neighborhood. Okay, I'm up in Topanga Canyon. So it's, I don't know if you're familiar, anybody listening around the world, but it's the hippie community back in the 70s.
Right.
And it's more like, we'll just have some cool houses up here and paint them orange, you know, or pink or whatever. It's very, it's whatever, do whatever, kind of casual environment. And, you know, I think, well, that's their expression. That's what makes them feel good. So it's not like, but so it's moving that wave into, yes, but why am I doing this? And then going inward, like you said, and seeing it as a defense mechanism or a defocus rather.
Yes.
On ourselves.
Exactly. And, it, you know, to me, it means I'm not accepting people as they are.
Yes.
And that's where the lack of humility comes in, that I somehow know better than them. But like what you just said, everybody has their own ways and choices and needs and desires. And we don't always know that. In fact, most of the time we don't. So the decisions that they make are ones that they make that they probably feels better for themselves. Right. And as long as it's not hurting me or my loved ones, I'm better off just accepting that. Right. And just, they say, minding my own business. I have enough things I need to work on.
Right.
Yeah.
So those are some of the wave enhancers that you're talking about. What are some other sort of wave enhancers as you share in your book?
Acceptance, again, I would say being the biggest one, the largest one. I use the word of acceptance as the great aligner. In other words, if we're letting go of control and things, and the currents are sort of released, it's the acceptance part, I think, that allows us to select and choose those paths that are better for us, that allows us to align with our better, more productive current, so to speak. So that's, to me, the big influencer or enhancer. One that goes right with that is trust. And I call that trusting the currents. You know, The currents may be good, bad, or indifferent, but to go with the flow, I think we have to accept them as they are and trust that we will be able to take care of ourselves, that we will be able to handle our situation. And, you know, when I look back, and I'm sure you probably do, when we look at our past and our travails in the past, I think for most people, you know, we're here today. We survived them.
Yes. Right?
We found ways to deal with them. So I just trust, especially when I don't, you know, in today's time, especially with all that's going on, I just sort of trust that I'll be okay if I'm living in acceptance and focusing on myself and what I have the power to do. Right. Rather than areas that I'm powerless over, and just trust. And that really works well for me. And together with, I use the word truth and humility.
Yes.
I have to be careful that I don't get into that mode, especially with my children, people close to me, that I know what's best for them and opine about that too often. So I need to know, and I've had experiences, particularly with my children, that I don't know what's best for them. You know, there's a story I tell in the book and to others about my youngest daughter when she was 12.
Right.
The way she would study was didn't take notes, waited to the last minute to cram for her test, lying in bed listening to loud music, and I'd go into her room and I said, Lana, you know, you should sit up. And the music's too loud, or, you know, shouldn't you start studying for your final exam? And I, after doing that for a couple of because that's what I did. Okay, it worked for me.
Right?
Well, so this is the way she, and she looked up at me and she said, Daddy, I'm different than you.
Aww.
I process things different than you at 12 years old. And it was like, it was an immediate truth. And it's, yes, she does. She is different than me. I didn't know at the time that she had OCD.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that alone, and she says, I need the pressure, meaning like the last minute pressure that allows me to focus.
Yes.
And the commonality is
right.
She did well on her tests and she did well in college. Sure. So that was really a great example to me is that I truly don't know what's best for others. You know, I can support them, guide them, offer my love and care, but I have to be very careful not to get into that mode of trying to make decisions for them.
Is that true? That's a lovely story. And I thank you for sharing that.
Because
those of us who have kids, you know, or adult kids or whatever. I mean, it's true because, I mean, they do have their own ways of doing things. Just, you know, paralleling that, my son did the same thing, still does things in his own way, which is cool. And I had to do exactly what you're doing after going, turn down the music, did it, because he could listen to a lecture in class and get it. Without usually having to study, he might write down key words, but that was his way of learning. And that wasn't my way.
Right.
He'd listen to a lecture and he'd go, got it. Like, what is that? You know, that's the audio aural learning that he was, you know, gifted with. But
exactly.
Anyway, that's the only thing. But no, it's true. I mean, the obstructors also, I think, are part of being human. And like you said, it's how can we face these challenges and how do we deal with them? It's about life. It's about being human. It's about managing these things. Sometimes we fall apart. Sometimes we have panic attacks. Sometimes we just shut down, whatever that means. But it's, I think you're right. I think the obstructors come into our life sometimes because it's natural and it's about how we can deal with them the best.
Exactly. And maybe to reduce them or minimize them. And even the awareness of them is helpful. You know, if I'm aware that I'm expecting too much of someone, you know, I can go into expectations as another big obstructor, but just the awareness, and then I can try to moderate it. So oftentimes the awareness automatically reduces whatever that obstructor is a little bit. It doesn't necessarily get rid of it, but maybe it lasts. And then maybe I can think about some other choices I might have, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, it's so true. It's so true. By the way, in case you just joined us, my special guest today is Daniel Miller. You know, the book he wrote is really amazing. To me, it's a very wonderful self-help psychological book. It's called The Way of the Wave, Nature's Model for Navigating Life's Currents. And it helps us deal with the chaos in our life and sort of a different way of thinking, dealing with anxiety and stressors and difficult people, etc. I loved what you were sharing earlier about in the morning, how you go out and sort of have a oneness with your tree and the nature, and you just sort of relax into that and feel that connection. I agree with you. Not all of us or people joining us can go out into the nature. Maybe they live in an apartment or a townhouse in a big city or whatever that might be. And that's great too. But whatever you can do to sort of get out or find peace in a comfortable room you're in, or sit on a balcony and just sort of look up over the crazy city, or whatever that is, music,
exactly.
It's going within and just kind of making yourself peaceful and still that mind, I guess, so you're not in bed right before you fully wake, you know, become awake and start ruminating. Oh my gosh, I have to do, wait a minute, take that time. And I love your gratitude too. I love that idea.
Yes. Yes. It's like you say, even to go outside and take a little walk, like, or you say, sit on a balcony. Yeah. It's takes our mind, our thinking mind, our heavily thinking mind, which mind can get very thinking.
You know, right.
It settles that down. And that's why I do it at the very start of the day, because I want to start my day as peacefully as I can. Now, things arise, you know, obviously during the day. That's life. I will often go outside multiple times, you know, just to get that fresh air and look up at the sky.
Sure.
Or I have a bird feeder and I love the birds and the sounds of the birds, right? So, yeah.
Beautiful.
Finding peace is really important, especially today. And in big city life, I think it's even harder. But there are ways. I think there are ways of doing it. It may just be going into another room or sitting in another chair or whatever, just to change our environment a little bit.
Exactly. Exactly. It's really true. And I think one of the most difficult issues for a lot of my patients is the idea of letting go of control, as we talked about a little bit earlier. It is very difficult because things seem, and especially because of the energy outside, is, yes, it's science. It's quantum physics. We're taking on the energy from everyone else and their thought frequencies, and it's science. And we're also creating that within ourselves, our wonderful bodies. But you know, what are some of the other ways that we can sort of feel a little bit more in control of our lives?
Well, thank you for that question. It's a very interesting question. You know, Alan Watts, the Zen philosopher, he said something in a book, I think it's called The Wisdom of Insecurity. And he said something basically is the more we seek security, the more insecure we become. Because you can't grab it, you can't hold it. Yeah. And so control, excessive control, and when I say control, it's more that emotional control.
Yes.
It's like grabbing onto a moving conveyor belt.
Yeah.
Trying to hold on to it. And we're either going to get dragged along or get burnt. And that's sort of what control is like when we hold on to it and try to grip it. And believe me, as a major controller, I worked hard to be a lot less controlling. And ultimately, to me, it's fear-based, primarily fear-based. And if we're able to identify the fears, and in this regard, I feel all fears are also illusory. And it gets into, you know, the acronyms for fear are good ones. Future events already ruined is a good one.
Another, right.
Yes. False evidence appearing real. But future events already ruined is, to me, is that we're speculating, right? We're speculating about the future. And I know when I start speculating, 80% of those speculations are negative.
Right.
Right. So if we can just realize that's what fear is, and then obviously hear and read about is just try to stray with what's right now, the present right now. Nothing's happening in the morning. And I give an example of a friend who called me one night, and his battery was acting up. His motor was acting up when he got home.
Yeah.
And he wasn't going to be able to tell whether it was a major or minor repair until the next day when he talked to the mechanic, saw the mechanic. And I just said, I'll just call him Byron. Byron, why don't you look at this way? There's probably a 50% chance that it could be a minor repair and a 50% that it could be a major repair. Why don't you just focus on the fact that it's a minor repair, you know, and then you're not going to worry about so much today. And then when you wake up and you find out what it is, if it is major, then you can deal with it then. But if it was minor, no problem. And it turns out he went the next day, started, and it started right up. That was good for him. But, you know, I guess what I'm saying is, especially with fear bases, we go to the negative too soon. And that's where trust comes in as well, the enhancer of trust. Because if we're more trusting that we're going to be okay, that we can take care of ourselves.
Exactly.
And I'm sure as a therapist, you've worked through with your patients a lot of how to deal with their fears.
Sure.
It's gonna reduce that fear. And the other part of it to me is I call it embracing our fears, facing our fears, addressing our fears. Because fears don't like being focused on too much because they lose some of the power.
Right.
You know, they lose some of the power. I think their bark is a lot louder than their bite.
Yeah. Right. It's that inner voice, that, you know, constant little voice that says, what if? What if? Right.
What if?
Yeah. Well, oh my gosh. We're always thinking the first. And as you said, sometimes it's a distractor, but it's also fight or flight. It's old brain survival mechanisms. I'm going to be ready for what if happens. But, you know, there are ways that, and I agree with you when you say trust and not saying, oh, everything's going to be perfect and it's going to be great. No, it's, you can deal with it because, and I always suggest, and I know you do too in your book, look back at how you dealt with things in the past. Was it successful? What were some of the fears in the past that you had to face that are similar now? And how can you better deal with them now? Or why are you having these fears? Well, it's because this happened to me in the past, but it's not the same thing now. I'm older, I'm wiser, I can do this. And I think that's the self-trust you're talking about, Daniel. Yeah.
It is. This is self-trust. And I have a friend, I remember one evening he was saying, you know, things may not be like I want or like I expect, but they're going to be okay.
Right.
And I'm okay with that. You know, and it's the same thing. It's just having, you know, in so many of these areas, it's a matter of finding the balance.
Right? Yes, it is.
We have extremes on both sides. I mean, certainly, we need to be fearful of a lot of things, you know, especially if it's physical danger or harm, right? But it's when that emotional thing takes over. So it's just trying to finding the balance and just stay there with that, you know, and to say trust to me is the best balance.
Yes, beautifully said. In case you just joined us, guys, I'm with Daniel Miller. He's world-renowned author, best-selling. We're talking about his latest book, The Way of the Wave, Nature's Model for Navigating Life's Currents. And we all need that, especially right now. And we also just talked about some of the most important ways that we can manage the waves, the negativity. Acceptance, okay. Trust, humility, truth, right? And you also mention in your book the concepts of intuition.
Yes.
And self-care. And that's getting a little more control. So, of course, self-care is part of getting control, right? About over ourselves.
It is exactly right. It's sort of interesting. The chapter on self-care is one I wrote 40 years ago, and just rereading it.
Because yeah.
My situation, as when I was going through my travails 40 years ago,
yeah,
I didn't have any self-care, quite honestly. When you're so wrapped up and so controlling and all that, I didn't take time to take care of myself, you know.
Right.
And today I certainly do because of what I went through, and I don't want that to happen again. But as I sort of share in the book, I believe that you can't live a balanced life without right. self-care. You know, if without self-care, it's going to affect us spiritually, emotionally,
sure,
physically, and even sometimes financially. So it's really important, and it's hard because, you know, sometimes you get so wrapped up, but I just sort of learned that on my computer, I have a little sticker that says, how urgent is it? How urgent is it?
Yeah.
And most of the time, almost every time, it's not that urgent, right? So if I want to go get a, sometimes I wouldn't get a haircut. if I want to go get a manicure, for sure I'll get a haircut, but certainly I'm going to keep up with my doctor appointments, right? And because when I look back, things were never really that urgent. And I, even when I went through all the challenges and I was really working a lot, I still had time to take care of myself. I just didn't.
Yeah, sure.
I didn't feel that I could.
Sure, sure.
And it's such an important perspective. I can't really speak enough about self-care because we cannot align with the currents if we're not exercising self-care. We're outside of the currents that are going to be the best for us, you know. And even if I go back, you know, the other metaphor other than waves that I use are body surfers.
Yes.
Body surfers, they have to use some self-care.
Yes.
They have to be, as I mentioned before, be accepting that the waves are in control, not them.
Right.
And they have to be not expecting too much of these waves. You know, they have to reduce their limited thinking. That's another big obstructor I'll talk about. Limited thinking. Whoa. All those things that when you're body surfing or just watching the ebb and flow of waves, they just relate so much to our lives.
Yes.
And as I say before, the more we can become aware of that, that's so important.
Yes.
And then maybe some tools to deal with that. Limited. I'm let you ask a question. I don't want to talk too much here.
Oh, I love it. No.
Okay. Let me talk about another obstructor. For me, that was a big one, is what I call limited thinking.
Oh, yes.
Some people may call it negative thinking. I look at it as the same. Limited thinking, and boy, I have to catch myself at this.
Yes.
I tend to go into, oh, no, that won't work. No, that's not a good idea. No, I don't have time to try that. So I get into a dismissive mood when new things are brought up. And
sure.
it's, to me, what I've learned is finding too much comfort in the status quo.
Yes.
Yeah. So
exactly right.
About 15 years ago, I went on a fly fishing for the mind trip.
How cool.
Psychologists. It was great. And they
right.
went fly fishing to different parts of the world. And I went with my son. And, you know, each day you would do an exploration. This day we were with a group of people on a boat that was going to go do some snorkeling at, the second largest reef in the world. And so we're going out there and we come
yes.
to a little village called Punta, I can't remember the right, and it's where the guides, the fishing guides, that's where they lived. And it was just a small little village where
right.
they caught lobster. And so they were sharing, this is where we live. And and my son Brandon said, let's go check it out. You know, let's go get some lobster and we can bring it back and have the cook cook it. And my first words were, if we do that, we're not going to be able to snorkel, right? So I went limited.
Right.
The other people chimed in. Oh, yeah, let's do that. So we went to this quaint little village, picked up some lobster, talked to the locals. And when we got back to the boat, the guide said, yeah, we can still do snorkeling.
Right. So
we did both, is what I'm saying. And it was just a really good example of how I can get into limited thinking. And I share other stories in the book, but what I've learned, and this is, to me, is an obstacle, when we limit our thinking, we limit the currents.
Right.
We limit our life options. We limit our choices. We limit our opportunities. So it's a big one.
Yes.
And how do you get over that?
Yes. You know, how do you get over that?
A few tips that work for me.
Yeah.
Is one, the awareness that I'm doing it, and I'm starting to catch myself much sooner. Yes. And I can myself, is my thinking limited? And almost always, yes. But the other key thing is I learned to ask myself, how would that feel?
Right.
How would I feel if I did that?
Yes.
This new thing. And almost every time when I ask that question, it doesn't feel so bad. Meaning it feels, that could be good. And it's led to more enjoying different choices and opportunities than ever before. And so I'm very fortunate because I'm around a person, my loving sweetheart wife.
Aww.
Who's an open thinker.
Nice. Oh, that's great.
She catches me on my stuff, and that's wonderful.
Love it.
That's a blessing. So I'm getting better.
That's cool. that's a great story, and good for you for having a loving partner who gives us balance sometimes.
Definitely, yes. Yeah.
What you just said reminds me of that movie that sometimes I watch. It's sort of, it's funny, you know, with Jim Carrey, it's Just Say Yes. He got into this sort of, it was like a cult of this speaker would say, just say yes to everything. It's life's an adventure, and stop being a hermit and stop being fearful and all that. And he started saying yes and getting involved and got into a lot of trouble and with people and situations that he had never been exposed to, but he learned a lot, and he eventually, it all works out. No spoilers.
Yeah, that reminds me of another obstructor, is setting boundaries. I call them borderless waves.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Where our waves sort of combine with the waves of others, or we let theirs intrude on our waves. And it's another, you know, very challenging one.
Right.
And so I've explored that in my life is what has helped me set. When I say borders, I'm going to use the word kind or thoughtful borders, right? Not saying you're stepping on your borders. Some people, you can get too strong on that. But for me, it's important to communicate my desires and wishes. In other words, to express them clearly.
Yes.
Is what my need is. So when I'm doing that, I'm setting a border. I'm informing them. I'm letting them know, and not a mean or nasty way or firm way. This is what I prefer, you know. And ideally, they will honor that, you know. And if they don't, then I can express it again. But if they're still too intrusive, I always have the choice, as I like to say, to swim in other waters, you know, and safer, more peaceful water. So I do have choices, but oftentimes people don't know, you know, I have to clarify because they may not know that they're doing it, you know, and I also may not understand them and what their motives are. So I might ask the question too. So I guess what I'm saying is I think a lot of times people are not invading our borders, so to speak, our waves, and we're not aware of that. So I think clarity and communication and expressing our needs and desires are key to establish our borders. And I don't even like to use the word borders. I would use the word comfort level.
Lovely. No, that's
my comfort level.
Beautiful, beautiful. And you're right. It's in the way we present it to others when we're drawing. I always call it creating kindly boundaries.
Wonderful.
So, you know, it's all about communication, which you talk about in your book. Briefly, I'd like you to say something about how people can deal with all of the political unrest and people who are unhappy and the chaos and the divisiveness going on in our country. How can we deal better with that and deal with people that we don't agree with?
It's the big question today. The last chapter, I call it the tidal wave of today, you know, the great divide. And I try to offer some ways. I think things. I'll go back to acceptance. When I talk about acceptance, acceptance does not mean that you agree or condone what's happening. It's more that you accept the underlying reality and you understand what you're powerless over and what you do have power on. You know, so in acceptance is. We can accept some of these many things that we're not able to change today, so to speak. And again, focus on what our choices are, what we can do to make ourselves feel better. And to try to take what I call some single steps. If you want to try to heal the divide, which is a desire of mine, or at least to take some steps, you know, the Chinese philosopher, I forget his name, Su is like... the first thing in a 1,000-mile journey is a single step. And I think that's the best we can do. And for me, and I talk about it in the book, I call them acceptance conversations that we can have with family members that have gone astray, we're having trouble with, or other people in our lives. And how can we bridge that? And to me, there's different keys. One, and if I go too much in this, let me know. I don't, because it's a whole other subject.
We have a couple of minutes left here, but go ahead.
Attentive listening. In other words, to listen to the concerns of others without offering advice.
Right.
Without making it my ways better, not trying to convince them to seek to agree with you. And look at it not as an argument, but as a conversation.
Yes.
And try to make it a civil conversation.
Sure.
Try to find your common interests and boundaries, whether it's how your children, where you were raised, how you deal with your elders. Try to find some common grounds. Try to find the humanness in the other. Okay.
Right.
Because we're all humans, but we don't see the humanness oftentimes in others.
True.
And the more we can begin to do this, and that's what I write about through these acceptance conversations.
Yes.
We maybe can take some steps towards merging these alternative universes that we call.
Yes. You know? Beautiful.
Not to say it's not a huge and ongoing and big challenge today, because it affects all of us.
Boy, it sure does. Yeah. It really does. And you have great advice in your book. And it looks like our time's just about up here. So, Daniel, thank you so much for being such a guest. I loved your book, and I think a lot of people can really benefit the way of the wave. You know, it's terrific. It's nature's model for navigating life's currents. A lot of helpful tools. I think people are really going to look and read and say, oh my gosh, I didn't look at it that way. You know, so he's got wonderful, inspiring stories that he'll teach you about, a lot of tools to help you deal with difficult times and people and unexpected things in our lives, and how to give up control.
Yes.
More with the flow. And it's all about managing your health, mental and physical as well. What's the best way people can find you and get your books?
Sure. On the online.
You have the great email.
Yeah. The online Amazon. I'm very proud and happy. I narrated the book, which was a very important to me because it's such a personal book. So on Audible, on iTunes, Amazon, and they could order that through their, you know, favorite booksellers, which would be great if they could do that to support the local booksellers. At DanielAMiller.com, my website, I have about 150 articles on the control and acceptance dynamics.
Yep.
And a little bit more about the wave. And I'm going to be writing about more about the wave on my website as well. So all those ways.
Oh, that's awesome.
And Dr. Michelle, I want to thank you for the nice conversation. And
pleasure.
Really enjoyed it. And I appreciate your questions. And I love what you're doing and the service that you're providing to people as well.
Oh, thank you so much, Daniel. That means a lot to me. And I really appreciate you. Take it easy, and hopefully we'll catch up again soon.
I hope so. Okay, take care.
Bye now. All right, everybody. Thanks so much for joining me on the couch today. I'm Dr. Michelle Cohen, and do take care of yourself first, and then you'll be great for others. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.